welcome to episode number 46 of the Bandwagon Hockey Podcast. It is the Sunday, March 10th, 2 days after trade deadline day. We are a little groggy this morning because we fast-forwarded an hour. Because we still do that in the year 2024, in Ontario anyway, and in Nova Scotia for Ryan. And yeah, so it's 11 a.m., feels like 10 a.m. I woke up at 9:30, felt like 8:30. You know the deal. It's every year. It's stupid. Anyway, what do you want to talk about, Ryan?
I think there was a few trades, maybe one stunner, you know, just a good old hockey deadline. Vegas saving the day. Maybe we can, I don't know if you want to.
Vegas really did save the day.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to start right there, but
I think Vegas. We should. I think maybe we go backwards just because we're both looking at Cap Friendly's trade tracker right now, and it goes most recent to, I guess, least recent, for lack of a better word. And if we were to go out of order, we would probably miss one. So we can kind of just run down the list, go over the stuff that's like actually important to us, and then we'll just go into our little sidebar conversations on each trade or what have you. I don't know. I mean, so deadline was on Friday. We wanted to do a Friday show, but Ryan had to work at Moosehead's game, which he also has to do today. Busy boy. But the deadline was an absolute bomb up until the deadline when we received a Bobby Mack bomb. Bob McKenzie reporting the massive Thomas Hertl. The massive Thomas Hertl trade, which had Thomas Hertl going to the Golden Knights in along with 2 third-round picks. We can get to that in a moment. In exchange for their 2023 first-round pick, David Enstrom, who was drafted 32nd overall, and their 2025 first-round pick, which is funny because then that moved the Hanifin pick that they traded to Calgary to 2026, all while Vegas keeps their 2024 first. And Ryan, this one was massive. You were freaking out when you texted me. I had turned off the deadline show when it happened. I was like, okay, it's done. Like, I usually am so done with it by the time it's like 2:30. And then all hell breaks loose. And it's funny watching them try to figure out what is acquired in real time and all the reaction. I saw the video of McKenzie like saying it on TSN, and all of the camera crew and everyone was like, holy crap. Like, what was your thoughts?
So immediately right away, I'm like, whoa, Hertl, because, one, he's just signed an extension, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, they had him at deadline. They could have gotten a haul for him 2 years ago at deadline, and then they just didn't trade him.
Yeah, so he's 2 years into an 8-year extension, so maybe kind of naively, I didn't expect him to be moved, maybe, or at least not at this time.
I don't think he was on anyone's radar.
Yeah. Well, not at this time anyways, but the Sharks being the Sharks, I guess you can't really expect anyone to not be moved. So there's that. But I just didn't expect Hertl to be moved, but I did expect Vegas to make another big move. I just didn't expect it to be a guy for 6 more years of term. I don't mind the price they paid whatsoever. It's 2025 first. And is it Edstrom?
Edstrom.
Yeah. Edstrom. So their first rounder last year as well. I think it's a pretty good price for Vegas to go out. Oh, and the 17% retention to bring them down to $6 million something. So for Vegas to get him at that cap hit, I think is... Well, the big criticism of the contract when it was first signed is obviously it's going to age a little bit poorly, him going into his mid to late 30s, making $8 million for that San Jose Sharks team. But now do you know what the exact cap hit is?
For Hertl?
Six.
6.75.
Okay, 6.75. That's, I guess it's not.
Which is pretty darn good for a second, like an elite second
line. Yeah. Center. Yeah. Like, so your worries about that contract aging poorly for the next 8 years, you're going to get really good value out of the next maybe 2 to 3, maybe 4, and then not as bad as it would have been through the latter half. So love it for Vegas. Little confusing from the Sharks side, but they did get decent value. So.
There's so much to unpack with this trade. Mm-hmm. in terms of future ramifications for Vegas, like, say hello to Chandler Stephenson on the UFA market this summer.
Oh, yeah.
Probably say hello to Jonathan Marchessault, unless he takes some sort of sweetheart deal to stay in Vegas.
Mm-hmm. And probably Martinez, too, if they want to resign.
Oh, Martinez is already gone because of Hanifin, I think, because I think they're going to sign Hanifin. But it's just absolutely bonkers that Vegas just keeps on turning stars through this organization. Like, it used to be, like, William Carlson, Max Pacioretty, Mark Stone, Marchessault, Riley Smith, and then like it was Shea Theodore was like the number one guy, and then they bring in Petrangelo, and then they bring in Eichel, and then they let Riley Smith go, and then they bring in I guess fast forward a year or so, and then bring in Barbashev, and then now they've got and then the goalie situation. They let Leonard go they let Fleury go to bring in Leonard. Leonard gets like I don't know what's up with him, but like he seems like he might be done. I'm not sure. But then Aiden Hill steps in as a stud, and he's like going to start for Canada next year. And then they bring in Hanifin in a trade, and then they bring in Hurdle in a trade. And it's just like a who's who of who's played for the Vegas Golden Knights. It's absurd. Like you go down the list of the roster, and you'd be hard pressed to find a guy that makes more than 5 million. Where if you say, like, who did this guy play for? Like, on their sort of, like, Hall of Fame shrine or whatever, what have you. Like, when you look at a name, it's like, who do you associate with them with? Like, Eichel, for me, is still a Saber.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're getting – I think what you're kind of getting at is that if you put their all-time list up against some other team's all-time list, it's already better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's already way better.
But I don't even know that that's what I was getting at, but that also makes sense. It's just that, like, all of the players they have are from other teams.
Yeah, that's true.
They've built their team through other teams, which is so uncommon in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that does not happen. Like, you don't... Jack Eichels just don't become available for trade. And a 1-in-100-year situation, and they go and acquire the guy. And
yeah,
Tomas Hertl, bad contract on a really bad team, get him for like 2 picks that you literally replace with the 2/3 that you get in the trade, which is also like a really underrated part of that deal too.
Obviously, the foundation of this all kind of comes from their amazing expansion draft where they collected assets, but they've also built this team through the trade deadline and free agency, which is normally the exact opposite of how you do things. Like, that's normally how you put the final polishings on a team, but they've pretty much gone out and got their core exclusively through trades and free agency, which is crazy.
Well, so like you've seen Moneyball, right? Like you're familiar with Moneyball. You know how the big sort of theme of that movie is taking advantage of a market inefficiency? Yeah. That's what Vegas has done in their whole existence. Like they've gone out there and they've noticed that these star players, like Noah Hanifin is a star player. And who else have they acquired at the deadline? Like, Ivan Barbashev, not necessarily a star, but they went and got him, and then they kept him. And now he's been part of the roster for the next 5 years. Mark Stone was a deadline. I always mix up him and Carlson for, like, Eric Carlson for their when they were traded. Mark Stone acquired at the deadline. He's automatically, like, he's going to end up being a franchise leader in a bunch of categories, and he's their first ever captain, and. They got him at the deadline for peanuts. The list goes on and on and on of guys that they acquire. And then in free agency, or even Eichel, like that was an in-season trade. It wasn't deadline, but it was in-season. Petrangelo was free agency. Who else? I mentioned Hanifin. Alec Martinez was free agency. They kept him after. Or not free agency, sorry. They got Alec Martinez at the deadline. And they've kind of picked up on this idea that a good organization can go get these star players for cheap when they're considered a quote unquote rental, but then just keep them because players want to be in Vegas. And that's what they did with Hurdle. They capitalized on this time period when prices are kind of sort of down because the teams have so little flexibility, and they go get this guy from San Jose, and San Jose was like, oh my God, you want to take this from us? Like, here, take him. And now Vegas has this great second line center for the next 6 years.
Yeah, and another thing that they've kind of caught on to that not many other teams have, other than maybe Tampa Bay, is that those picks and prospects that they're constantly trading will almost never turn into the players that they're acquiring. So it's almost always worth it. Like, unless you're getting a top 10 pick, which Vegas isn't because they're always good. It makes perfect sense for them to keep trading these first round picks. And it's hilarious that they kept their 2024 through this, because I guarantee you that prospect's getting traded at the 2026 deadline.
Or he'll just like be their other version of Brennan Brisson and then come up and be a cheap guy on their team that they can slot into the bottom six, which I think is probably what Brisson's going to be.
That, or they trade him straight up for a Barbashev.
Yeah, like exactly. They did. Like, but they're going to use him. Like, I trust that Vegas is going to make use of that player. This is probably what they do. They notice if a guy is going to turn out or not, and then before anyone else notices, because no one has that as much intel as they do on their own prospects, they flip them for players. Like, I saw a list of all the first-round picks, either future or former, that Vegas has drafted or we're going to possess in the future. From, like, 20... whenever their first draft was, 17 until 2026. And the only one that's still in the organization is their 2024 first and Brendan Brisson. But the only one of those picks that's turned out to be even a remotely relevant player is Nick Suzuki, which sucks. Like, you want to have him on your team. But if you aggregate all the trades together, you really don't care that Nick Suzuki's on your team, because you used fucking Peyton Krebs to get Jack Eichel, and you used Eric freaking Brandstrom to get Mark Stone. Like, when you're constantly hitting on these trades, and you could argue, like, if Vegas didn't hit and come into their cap situation, which I forget why they had to trade Pacioretty, but I think it was to get Eichel. So in the grand scheme, they had to get rid of Pacioretty for nothing, but he was a really good player for them, and you probably don't necessarily, like, you're not broken up over not having Suzuki on your team, because you have all these other guys that are better anyway.
I know they traded away Nick Suzuki, but I almost completely forgot that Pacioretty was part of that whole thing. So when you started talking Pacioretty and Knights, I was like, whoa, okay, that happened.
He was there. Like, I think they traded a first, a second, and a third for Pacioretty.
That might have been – that one might be the Tatar deal.
Yeah. That might have been Thomas Tatar, actually, when they traded three picks. That was one of their bad ones. Let me just check. Okay, Ryan.
Anyways, most of the assets that they trade away turn into either, like, sort of middling players or...
So they traded Thomas Tatar, who had a $4.8 million cap hit, Nick Suzuki, and a 2019 second-round pick for Mats Pacioretty in September 2018. So that was coming off of their Stanley Cup Finals appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's wild.
Now I want to see, because they also traded a bunch for Tatar, which was a disaster. They traded 2019 second, 2018 first, which ended up becoming Joe Valeno, and a 2021 third, all for Thomas Tatar. And you've never heard of the third or second that they traded in that trade. So who cares, right? Like, who cares?
Yeah.
It's insane. It's a great, I love the philosophy. It's so balls to the wall. And a lot of people talk about, like, whether or not this is going to be sustainable. Did I interrupt you? Were you in the middle of, like...
No, I was just rambling until you found what you're looking for.
And everyone talks about, like, is this sustainable? Is it oh my God, sustainable. Like, I kind of think it is.
Yeah, it is, because you look at...
They haven't been bad yet.
Yeah, and you look at the players they're acquiring. It's like 28-year-olds for the most part. Like, it's not like these are 35-year-old stars they're bringing in for first-round picks. Like, these guys are going to be good for the next 5 to 7 years, regardless.
Like every single forward on their roster, except for Jonathan Marchessault and somehow William Karlsson's 31, is under the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
They have two defensemen that are going to play for them that are under the age of 30, and they're going to replace one of them basically next year going forward with Noah Hanifin, who's 27. Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy. Both their goalies are 27. Like, they're like, not acquiring these 35-year-olds.
Like, you can maybe have a first-round pick come in and be efficient in a few years, or you can trade him with maybe some other middling assets for a bona fide star that can make an impact.
Who's going to be a star for each of those next 3 years while that prospect you traded is developing.
Yeah, exactly.
And the thing I love, too, so let's, like, who knows what they're going to do with their first this year. But, like, they're not going to be bad in 2025 or 2026. So those picks are going to suck. And then come 2026, 27, they're going to have all their picks back again that they can trade. Like, they're just going to, they're probably just going to go forward with this roster, tinker on the edges, but like, they have their core kind of set for the next few years, assuming they can keep Hanifin. And then in 2 or 3 years' time, once they've let their picks kind of replenish again, they can just trade them again and then just keep on filtering players through. I think it's going to be sustainable because the team is so smart and good at what they do. Yeah. Okay, Ryan, we have so many trades to get to, and we've spent 15 minutes on this one. So we'll fast forward a little bit. I don't know if you have a quick thought. I mean, if we stop for trades like this, but we're never going to get through them. But this the Sharks Devils trade of Kokkonen and Vanecek was interesting.
Why don't we just bundle this? Yes, let's just bundle the whole jersey crease thing together. Why don't we?
Right. Okay. So they traded a third for Jake Allen.
A third that can turn into a second if he plays 40 games next year, which I don't think he will. But yeah.
Okay. So that's basically contingent on whether they go get Jacob Markstrom in the offseason.
Yeah, essentially.
So okay. So basically, New Jersey traded Vitek Vanecek, a seventh, and a conditional third for Jake Allen and Kaapo Kähkönen. And you might wonder why they would do that. Jake Allen signed through next year, and in a perfect world for Tom Fitzgerald, he's their backup goalie next season. Whether it's to Jacob Markstrom, Yusei Saros, John Gibson, somebody. They're going to go get somebody in the offseason. That's almost a guarantee. You have to think that they're going to do that because Vitek Vanecek is signed through next year at a $3.4 million cap hit, and they acquire expiring money in Kaapo Kähkönen. San Jose does this because they need someone to play goalie for them next year, and they get a seventh-round pick in the deal, which is doesn't sound good, but it's better than not having anything. And also, low-key, Vitek Vanecek is worse than Kaapo Kähkönen, and San Jose is still going to be very much in tank mode next year. Mm-hmm. And New Jersey acquires an expiring salary, and now they have so much more wiggle room to A, tinker with their roster, and B, go get a goalie.
Yeah, I absolutely loved these moves. Like, sure, they probably should have moved for a goalie earlier in the season to keep their season alive, but I think this is some really efficient work to kind of set up their crease for next year. And I really think Kähkönen is a solid goaltender. Like, you look at his goal saved above expected in San Jose, and it's like weirdly good. So I think he can be a solid option down the stretch. Obviously, we'll see if their plan is to still bring in Markstrom in the offseason. Then you have your tandem as Markstrom, Allen for next year, which I think is super solid. Yeah. The Habs retained on Allen, so I think he's down to 1.9 for next year as a backup. So yeah. I think that I just think it was an efficient kind of two moves to set up their crease for next year, should they wish to go get Markstrom.
Matt Dumba in a seventh, no retention from Arizona for a 2025 fifth. A lot of people thought this one was really funny because Arizona, or there was a report out there that Arizona was asking for a first for the guy, and then they ended up ditching him for a fifth rounder in exchange, and along with a seventh rounder, so essentially giving away the player for a two round upgrade at the end of the draft.
Yeah,
which was funny. I have no thoughts on the trade. I just wanted to point that one out because it's funny. Boston picks up Patrick Maroon and Andrew Peak. Couple of depth moves. The Maroon one is funny because their bonehead commentator basically fat shamed him live on a broadcast a couple years ago. And there's this great photo of Jack Edwards going down on a knee and apologizing to the guy. And Maroon very clearly wants nothing to do with his apology. So that'll be interesting. I think there's a quote out there, too, that Maroon was like, it feels like I'm hated here.
Yeah.
That's going to change pretty fast. I think
Boston's
gonna fall in love with the guy.
Was he on the... Yeah, he was on the St. Louis team that beat them in the finals, right? Yeah.
And then he was on Tampa 2 years in a row when they won their cups, which is a divisional rivals type thing.
Yeah.
3 years in a row, actually, I think, for Maroon. Anyway, moving on. In one of my personal favorite moves of the deadline, Nashville acquires Jason Zucker for a sixth round pick. Also, like a case of Arizona getting nothing for their asset. And it's very blatantly obvious that's because they just didn't have to retain. So they were willing to get nothing for these guys so that they wouldn't have to pay them anything down the stretch.
Yeah. And like they already have, do they have two retention slots taken up or just the one? Cause obviously the one's gone for 8 years, but, right. Yeah, I don't know if that came into it too, whether they have only one slot left or not. But but yeah, essentially it was sold that these players went for pennies on the dollar.
They only have one slot used on
Caitlin
Larson.
So maybe that
God, that really sucked for them.
Yeah.
Every time I see that, I'm surprised.
Also, though, I know we're way past it now, but San Jose not having any of their retention slots for the next 2 years during a rebuild is an interesting decision.
It's interesting because now, because their MO is going to be to sign guys to then trade them at the deadline, right? Like it's what they kind of did with Anthony Duclair.
Yeah, they must be really banking on the cap increases to take away these retention moves. But
I think that's kind of false hope. I think teams. Teams are still going to be at the cap, right?
I agree. Yeah.
It's just going to be a higher cap.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember seeing this many retention transactions like 5 years ago. But
That's because the cap hasn't moved in 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. What I'm saying is that like it won't be as necessary to get a decent return.
I think though that's going to take a couple years because I think teams are going to use the $4 million increase so fast this summer, or they're just going to use it by default because every single team is in LTIR. Yeah. Like I think it's going to take 2 or 3 years to really get some breathing room on the cap.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm kind of playing devil's advocate with myself here because I think it was kind of stupid on San Jose's part. But continue.
Yeah, it was interesting. The other point of view on that is that who else is San Jose going to retain on?
Yeah, that's true.
They don't have anyone,
man.
Logan Couture doesn't play hockey anymore.
No.
Like, poor guy. And no one else on that team is worth touching. So, I don't know. Yeah. I think the only thing it really hurts them that with is that they can't go sign guys in free agency and then flip them.
Mm-hmm.
True. But, anyway. Okay. Personally, one of my favorite trades of the deadline, Winnipeg acquires Tyler Toffoli at 50% retained in exchange for a 2025 second and a 2024 third. A lot of people were kind of surprised at the price here, but it felt kind of bang on. Like he was the highest priced winger besides Jake Guentzel at the deadline. And Jake Guentzel, we'll get into that eventually, but he didn't even go for a first round pick. Or not even a real first round pick. Like the first that Pittsburgh got was fake. Obviously, they got prospects, which they prioritized, but I don't know. Toffoli went for more than Mantha. He went for more than Tarasenko. He went for more than pretty much any other winger. I thought it was pretty bang on. I love it for Winnipeg.
Yeah, the market for wingers, everyone always seems to over-evaluate it too, or overestimate it, I guess. Like, especially this year with the buyer's market, being what it was. Like, like you mentioned, Guentzel going for the package he did, we'll get into it. But like 2 and a third felt right for Toffoli. I don't know, like maybe some other years at the deadline you're getting a late first, but I don't know how much more you're expecting to get.
Yeah, I don't know. Especially given the market, like you can't really compare across years, I find.
For sure.
When teams try to do that, I think they get into trouble or they get disappointed. Like you're setting yourself up for disappointment if you compare to a previous year's market.
But I loved Winnipeg's kind of deadline period acquisitions, like Monahan, Toffoli, and Colin Miller, right? I think they got as well.
I might have actually skipped that one. Yeah, they got Colin Miller for a fourth from New Jersey. That was that happened after the Hurdle trade, so that one was really great. Okay, let's get into Carolina. They did a couple – actually, no. Okay, before we do that, Florida acquires Kyle Okposo from the Sabres in exchange for pretty much literally nothing. And this is just a case of Buffalo letting their guy, who's been their captain for 2 years, been in the organization for, I think, almost 10, just go chase a cup. He'll be on the fourth line with Florida. Somehow somehow Buffalo didn't have to retain. So somehow Florida still had cap space. I don't get how they have that. I love that team.
NHL's new premier destination, the Florida Panthers.
Yeah. Just a case of a guy whose name has been in NHL lore for the last 15 years, kind of toiling away in Buffalo for a lot of those years, getting to go chase a cup on the fourth line of probably the best team in NHL right now.
I also saw a quote from Sam Reinhart just talking about how much Okposo meant to him while he was in in Buffalo. So I think that connection would be cool too.
That'll be cool. Yeah, that is cool. That's just gonna, like, he'll be a fourth line contributor for them.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it's like old guy without a cup. You need all of those.
Yeah, 100%. And like, if he's as good in the room and just like a great teammate, like Reinhardt's saying, I think, great fit.
Okay. Let's get into Carolina. They did a lot. Let's quickly go over the Kuznetsov thing. So they acquire Evgeny Kuznetsov, who signed through next season at 50% retained, which gives him a $3.9 million cap hit. He's currently in the NHL, in the AHL, but I think that'll quickly change because here it says he has a $2.75 million cap hit, but it should be 3.9. And in exchange, Washington actually acquired an asset for him, which I was very surprised by. They get a 2025 third. And this is obviously a case of a very, very, very smart organization betting on a guy that they like, which I have no issue with. I really like, but I'm still surprised that they actually had to give up what they did.
Yeah, outside of having to give up a half-decent asset, this is such a Carolina move. Like, it's exactly what they did to get Brent Burns, essentially. Yep. It's exactly what they did to get Max Pacioretty, essentially. Yep. Like, it's you're taking not really a flyer, but just, like, an older guy who's had in his prime kind of way away from him looking for a fresh start. So it remains to be seen if he can kind of bounce back in 2024. His numbers have been, and analytics have been, really rough for the last little while. So maybe he can find some Carolina magic. We'll see.
A lot of people have been saying the only thing he's still good at is passing. Which,
yeah.
Who knows? And maybe playing. Washington's also been kind of a dumpster fire the last 2 years. So
true.
I know for sure Kuznetsov's point totals were there very recently, actually. I think, he had 55 in 81 last year. And then 2 years ago in 2021, 2022, he was point a game in 79 games.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's a solid bet.
I also think he's been wanting out of Washington for a while.
Oh, yeah. And I just think, which makes Washington getting a third for him all the more impressive. Yeah,
it's impressive for Washington for sure.
Mm-hmm. But just one last comment on that. I think if it doesn't necessarily work out for them, though, it might be a little rough having him on the roster for next year. But
yeah. Yeah, I agree. We'll see. There's some inherent risk there with Carolina, but I really trust that organization. And they obviously trust Rod Brind'Amour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on to the deal. Second deal of the day. The deal of the day was Tomáš Hertl. This was the day before. So the day prior, the deal of the day was Jake Guentzel going to the Carolina Hurricanes, 25% retained for a $4.5 million cap hit, along with Ty Smith, who's still kicking it. In exchange,
Sorry, I just feel like he's been in the random tag-along piece in like three trades over there, but it feels like he's always involved in a trade.
Yeah, it's funny. In exchange, Pittsburgh acquires Michael Bunting, who's in the first year of a three-year contract at $4.5 million, zero retention there. They acquire Vasily Ponomarev, who was Carolina's second-round pick in 2020. They acquire Cruz Lucius, sick name, fourth rounder from 2022 from Carolina, and Ville Koivunen, who was their second rounder in 2021. In the trade, Pittsburgh also acquires a conditional 2024 second round pick via Philadelphia. So it's Philadelphia's second rounder, which kicks up to a first, Carolina's first, if Carolina wins the cup. And they also acquire a conditional fifth if Carolina wins the cup. So Pittsburgh will be Carolina Hurricanes fans, it looks like, in the playoffs.
Is it the cup or is it three rounds?
It makes it to the Stanley Cup. Okay. Yeah. So,
right.
So, yep. Okay. So if Carolina gets to the Stanley Cup final, the pick that Pittsburgh acquires will go from like a mid second rounder to the 32nd overall pick. And then if Carolina wins the cup, they get a fifth.
Okay. Great.
But obviously the bulk of the deal is Bunting and the three prospects. Pittsburgh obviously prioritizing these guys in their very early 20s rather than undrafted draft picks, like 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, because they want to be competitive while they have Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang and Erik Karlsson contributing at the NHL level. And
yeah, I'm I'm fascinated to know the other deals. Like, what was turned down to get three guys who might be close and one guy who Dubas obviously loves.
Fuck. That's a funny story to this too. That's awesome.
Considered that part to this?
No, yet? I never actually.
Funny. That was immediately my first thought when I heard Bunting was held out. I was like, Dubas is getting his guy.
That's crazy. I think taking on Bunting is crazy though.
Like, I think so too.
Why are you taking that money?
Because he likes Bunting.
Oh my god, dude! And
did you see? Did you see Bunting was on Crosby's left wing like immediately?
No, I actually haven't looked at the games from last night yet. Or would that have been Friday?
I don't know if he's actually played yet, but I did see a tweet. Maybe it was
practice he was on his line.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know. It's tough because like I'm not one to get into prospects. I don't know anything about prospects, which is why this trade like is hard to sort of look at. Because if they were picks, we would be like, okay, a pick is worth this much, but I don't know what these prospects are. I know according to, I think, Scott Wheeler, these prospects that Pittsburgh got were Carolina's 6th, 7th, and 9th in their organization. But that being said, they become Pittsburgh's, I think, 2, 3, and 4, or like 3, 4, and 5. They become, like, all three of them become Pittsburgh's 3 of their top 5 prospects, which is incredible. Mm-hmm.
And maybe even if – sorry, didn't mean to cut you off. But maybe even if, like, two of them become guys who play games, like, it – I don't want to say it's worth it, but like they have nobody coming right now to try to supplement that group. So I that's clearly what they were looking for is guys who can maybe step in soon.
It's just, it's crazy that they weren't able to crack that top five prospect pool.
Yeah, I agree.
But I mean, Carolina, maybe they had, I don't know. Like that's kind of, you mentioned it. Like, I want to know what else was offered and see what Dubas passed up on to get this package. The other thing too is I guess they do get Bunting, so like he's gonna help with the NHL roster for the next 2 years, 2.5 years.
Yeah, and maybe he puts up stupid numbers next to Crosby. Like, who knows?
He's performed well with top players before. Maybe he could be their Kunitz. But I don't know. Like, I wonder. Like, did Pittsburgh not give Carolina permission to talk to Gensel about an extension? Did Carolina not want to have an extension in place so that they wouldn't have to trade as much, knowing that they're gonna have the player on their team for the next 3 or 4 years or 3 or 4 months so they can talk to him now? Like, I don't
honestly know. It would be such a Carolina thing to view this as a pure rental, but
yeah, that too, because like, I don't know that you're terribly broken up about what you gave up if he does end up being a rental, because Bunting's
money. Yeah, and that's just always their play, though. They never sign anyone like long term. Yeah,
and it's weird that Pittsburgh didn't. Because I'm honestly think, because obviously, like, I think a Gensel contract's going to be the max term, either 7 or 8 years, depending on if he signs in Carolina or in free agency, because he's 30. Like, he's like, this is going to be his last big contract, probably. And Pittsburgh probably doesn't want to keep on adding years to this expiring core. Like, Crosby has 1 year left after this one, but then he'll sign his extension for who knows how many years. Malkin signed, what, a 4-year deal? Letang signed 6. Mm-hmm. Like, do you really want to tack on another contract for 8? Like, I think Dubas has Crosby's career in mind, which let's say is like 4 or 5 more years, as like a hard stop for when to fully just tear the shit down.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it was probably the best of both worlds for him, but I think to get most value, you would have had to focus on one or the other. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, it does. Yeah. So I don't know if splitting it down the middle, focusing on future and now is, I it's hard to judge without knowing what the other trade packages were, because you've just seen what the market was this deadline. It was obviously a buyer's market. So, but I find it hard to believe that they didn't have a trade package that had a solid first round pick in it. But
yeah, but then if you do that, you probably don't get the prospects. So
true. Yeah. So it's a trade off, I guess.
It's a thing. Let's talk about DraftKings. Bet the action on the ice with DraftKings Sportsbook. Some kind of interesting games. A lot of guys, I think, are going to be making debuts with their teams tonight, although there were so many games yesterday, and it's always so surprising how quickly these players are in the lineup for their new teams. But, I mean, Crosby McDavid is always kind of must-see, regardless of where Pittsburgh is at in their sort of winning cycle. Edmonton -1.5, Pittsburgh +1.5. I kind of like Pittsburgh. Like, who knows? Crosby just goes apeshit after trading away the best winger he's ever had. So I like Pittsburgh +1.5. Download the app now and use code THPM. New customers can get $150, $50 instantly in bonus bets for betting just $5 on hockey. That's code THPN, only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. Betting bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. That's weird. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Okay, moving on. Tampa acquired, or are you good with the Gensel stuff? Also weird that he's just going to be in the division, huh?
I don't know. It seems like teams are less and less caring about that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt like there was a lot of that this year. Like Kuznetsov was in Division Two. Tarasenko in Division. Well, Tarasenko had no choice, but anyways.
I think it's overrated.
Oh, like completely. Trading
within the division. Get the best package. Who cares where he goes?
Mm.
Okay. Let's rip through some here. Tampa acquires Duclair for a third. Nashville gets Anthony Beauvillier for a fifth. Nashville sneaky taking in a lot of money. They had so much cap space. They got Beauvillier at a full 4.15. They got Jason Zucker at a full 5.3. Usually teams can never do that at the deadline, especially teams that are buying. What else do we got? Colorado acquires Brandon Duhaime for a third. Yakov Trenin for a third. Edmonton gets Troy Stetcher for a fourth in 2027.
All good. I just, rather than doing this, you maybe want to pick apart Colorado's deadline as a whole.
We definitely got to do Colorado, and then we also got to do Hanifin.
Okay.
Although already kind of did Hanifin. So we actually might even be able to skip Hanifin because we kind of did that.
Sorry, continue. Just like Colorado as a whole popped into my head.
Okay, Toronto gets Joel Edmondson for a third and fifth. Rangers get Wenberg for a second and a conditional fourth. The condition is ridiculous. What the hell? Oh my god, do you want to hear this condition?
Oh, is this the Lundqvist one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is up with that? Oh my god.
Because it's a previous... Sorry, it was a previous pick from a previous trade, but yeah.
Oh my god, that's funny. The condition follows a previous trade. If Nils Lundqvist earns 55 cumulative points over the 2023 and 2023-24 regular seasons, the pick upgrades to Dallas's 2025 third. Oh my god. Imagine Seattle pulls the goalie so that Lundqvist can score on them or something in late in the game.
That's so funny.
Okay, so Vegas acquires Noah Hanifin from the Calgary Flames with Philadelphia eating 25% of... Oh, wait. Yeah, with Philadelphia eating 25% of his salary. And from Vegas, they get a fifth-round pick for that. Calgary acquires Daniil Mirimanov, a 2024 third-round pick that is contingent, that becomes a second if Vegas wins one round. So you can probably bank that. 2020 and a 2026 first because the 2025 first was traded for Tomas Hertl. We kind of already dissected this. I don't mind the package for Calgary. I think I would have liked to see them get an earlier first for Hanifin, but
yeah, I think
so many picks over the next few years, it's kind of okay to just space them out.
Yeah, I think what I saw was, this could be wrong, but I think if Vegas didn't trade the 2025 one, it was going to have protection. But now that they're getting the 2026 one, it doesn't.
Right. Yeah. It was going to be top 10 in 2025, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was their small benefit for adding in that condition.
Yeah. So basically the condition exactly reads, if the pick is traded by March 10th, 2024, which is the day after the deadline, or if the pick is top 10, Calgary will instead receive a 2026 first. Okay. Edmonton made a kind of like a, I don't know. I don't really care about it that much, but it's significant. They get Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick from Anaheim. Tampa plays third-party broker. They get a fourth from Edmonton for that. Anaheim gets a first, unconditional, and a 2025 fifth, which becomes a fourth if Edmonton wins the cup. Okay, mm-hmm. Let's get into Colorado because now these are back-to-back because they happen within moments of each other. The net trade, basically, is that Colorado gets Sean Walker and Casey Mittelstadt, and out goes a first, Ryan Johansson and Bowen Byram. To break them down, they send Ryan Johansson's full salary and a 2025 first-round pick, as long as it's not top 10, so it's protected top 10, to Philly in exchange for Sean Walker, again, no retention, and a 2026 fifth. Okay, we've got that. Everyone knew something else was coming. They acquire a defenseman. They trade away their quote-unquote second-line center, their false second-line center. And in a subsequent trade, they send Bowen Byram to the Buffalo Sabres in exchange for second-line center Casey Mittelstadt, who has had a breakout season and a half for the Buffalo Sabres. Ryan, this was my favorite series of trades from deadline week. What were your thoughts?
I absolutely loved it from Colorado. Like, they were just cooking. It was clear that they needed to move a defenseman. People thought for years it was going to be Sam Girard. But yeah, it ends up being Bowen Byram. I guess they saw maybe him stalling out a bit, and an opportunity to go out and get better value. I'm kind of surprised that I don't know. I'm kind of surprised that Buffalo would move him or Mittelstadt for Byram, just considering that they already have Power and Dahlin on that left side. Kind of similar to Ottawa's problem that with Sanderson, Chabot, and Chychrun, but I don't know. How did you feel about that swap in particular for Buffalo?
For Buffalo, yeah, I liked it because if Byram's not a fit, you can trade him again. But
yeah, I guess
Casey Mittelstadt was going to be hitting arbitration this summer, and they probably didn't want to give him a long-term contract because they have so much money tied up in their current core, which they've kind of established as their core.
Yeah.
And so if they go to arbitration, Mittelstadt, basically the money that Mittelstadt gets for next year is then out of Buffalo's control, right? Because a third party comes in and decides. Usually they just split the difference between what Colorado's offering and what Mittelstadt's asking. But a lot of times the player will ask for something a little bit inflated because of how frequent it is that the arbitration guy just splits the difference. So I don't think Buffalo wanted anything to do with that. I would imagine Colorado's going to try to hammer out an extension with this guy.
My guess
would be in the $5 to $6 million range, maybe. Kind of at that, maybe between like, I'll do a wider range between 4 and 6 because he's going to be like their second line center of the future, right? But for Buffalo, they do have a bit of a logjam on the left side, but I think Bowen Byram was playing on the right in Colorado, and then I believe Dahlin had been playing on the right when Matthias Samuelsson was healthy. So like they've got guys that have been playing on the right. Obviously, it's not ideal, but all of a sudden, their top four defensemen plus Ryan Johnson, who came up recently from the AHL, who's a former first-round pick for them, is also left-handed. So 5 of their 6 defensemen are left-handed right now. But you get a look at a guy who was drafted 4th overall, was legitimately a defensive catalyst for the team that won the Stanley Cup in 2022. And I don't know, he signed through next year. So you get a free look at a guy who could become a superstar for you in 2 years. And then if he's not a fit but he plays great, you could trade him in exchange for more stuff. Or you just keep him if it works out great. I kind of like it for Buffalo.
Right. Yeah, I guess if they
love
were really
Colorado.
That.
Love it
oh,
for
yeah,
Colorado.
Yeah.
Byron
yeah, I guess, I guess if Buffalo is really that scared of the contract situation this offseason, it makes sense to move him for the value then.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that was definitely a motivator for Buffalo being willing to trade him, because
for sure.
Otherwise they would have paid him by now, right? Like, they paid all the mm-hmm. guys. Why not pay this guy that's been arguably the best out of them this year? Yeah. And then the Sean Walker deal, I like it because Walker is right-handed. So he kind of comes in the exact same role that Byram had, except he goes on the other side and can either – he'll probably play with, like, Sam Girard or something. It just balances yeah. their D out a little bit better. But, yeah, Byram, like, he just wasn't going to work there, right? Like, it just wasn't the right situation because they have Kale McCarr, Devin Taves, Samuel Girard, and. Mm-hmm. And the injury history and this and that and everything else. They just need to move on from the guy, I think, and they bring in Sean Walker, who is a play-driving right-handed defenseman. They get rid of a problem in Ryan Johansson. Did you see some of the stories about him in the dressing room there?
Yeah, I did, and it's funny how life changes in one day for one guy. Like, yeah. One day you're the second-line center for a Stanley Cup contender, and the next you're in purgatory somewhere in Pennsylvania. So
yeah,
it's tough. Crazy.
Because
he's not reporting. Sorry, he's not yeah. reporting to the AHL either. He's just hanging out.
Yeah, he's just chilling. It's kind of
yeah.
funny. I don't know. Bad vibes, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do Mantha first, and then we'll wrap up the show with the Sens trade, the only Sens trade that they did. Yay. Vegas acquires left winger Anthony Mantha in exchange for 2024 second and 2026 fourth. Man, like, you just forget about this one, right? You just forget about it. Mantha's an awesome player. He's so big.
Adding Mantha, Hanifin, and Hurdle at the deadline is ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous. Like, oh my God. He has 20 goals this year already in 56 games. Looking at his previous stats, like, he's not as impressive as I thought he was, but he's so big, he's so fast, and you mm-hmm. just know he's gonna thrive in Vegas's bottom six, because, like, he's gonna be playing with, like, freaking William Karlsson or Nick Waugh or something, whereas, like, he was on Washington's third line. Like, who the shit is that Washington's third line center? Like, I don't know. But yeah. like, in Vegas, he's gonna be playing with, like, probably, like, Chandler Stephenson or William Karlsson or Nick Waugh. Or who knows, maybe he gets bumped up to the second line and plays with Tomas Hertl. Like, for God's sakes, what a rich, rich team.
And
I love it for Washington. I love how Washington's been doing stuff lately.
Honestly, I do love him as a player, but more recently, outside of this year, he's been iffy, to say the most. So getting what they did for him in a bounce-back season is, I think, great.
Yep.
And then for Vegas too, like, I think this guy still has stuff in the tank. When him and Verona were traded for, I think it was one for one, right?
There might have been a pick in there. I'll check.
Maybe a pick. Anyways, I remember those were what?
It was Verona, Richard Panik, a 2021 first and a 2022.
Okay. It was not one for one.
It was not one for one. And the first somehow ended up with Dallas, because that first became
there was
Wyatt
a
Johnston.
First in that. Oh my God.
Yeah,
okay. Whoa.
Wyatt Johnston.
Okay. Not one for one. Those are the only two pieces I remember from that trade. But anyways, I remember when they were traded for each other. Mantha was still very, I'm pretty sure he was pretty highly regarded at that point. And he,
oh my God, it was not one for one. That's funny.
That's hilarious. But no, Mantha's a good player. I think he's been more streaky the past couple of years. So it'd be interesting to see how he fits in a loaded Vegas team.
I wish, you know how you can click on a player and see their trade history?
Yeah.
Friendly? I wish you could see a draft pick's trade history, because I need to find mm-hmm. out how Dallas got that pick for Wyatt Johnston now. Anyway, okay.
Wait, so, okay. No, okay.
What?
I was going to try to track it, but I'll look it up after.
Do you, like, have an idea?
No, I was just going to try to think
it
through.
I feel like I've actually looked into it before, and I think it was a draft pick trade. Like, I think it was just a case of Dallas moving up in the draft and Detroit moving back in 2021.
Wait, it was Wyatt Johnson's pick, right?
Yeah, the 23rd overall pick in 2021 went from Washington to Detroit to then, I assume, went to Dallas.
Okay, I think HockeyDB tracks the trades of picks.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. So April 2021, draft picks traded in the Vrana Mantha trade. And then in, oh my God, it was a pick swap. In July.
Yeah, the draft was late that year, remember?
Oh, yeah, okay. And then in July, Detroit trades a second-round pick and a fifth-round pick for the pick that... Oh, I don't know. Okay.
Wait, what?
Wait. I'm trying to read this, but it's not, like, laid out nicely.
Dallas traded a second and a fifth to move up to 23?
Okay, I'm just going to read it verbatim. Draft pick rights traded from Detroit Red Wings with second round pick in the 2021 draft and round five pick in the 2021 draft. Two Dallas Stars for round one pick in the 2021 draft, Sebastian Kosa.
So maybe Dallas had the 15th pick or wherever Kosa was drafted. Mm-hmm. Was it 19 for Kosa? I don't know.
It was 15. You nailed it.
It was 15. So maybe Detroit actually traded up with Dallas. I don't know. That's worded really poorly.
For a second and a fifth though? Like, no. Well, okay. Maybe, I got to find this.
Was it draft pick rights along with a second and a fifth? So maybe it was 23, a second and a fifth to get 15. That would make sense.
Okay, yeah, that might be it.
How do you... I want to see.
I don't know how to track this.
Okay, let me see if I can... Maybe it speaks to me. 2021 NHL entry draft. That's 100% what happened anyway. How do you how do you check the pick trades? I don't know. I think the pieces are there, though. Kosa went 15 to Detroit and Johnston went 23 to Dallas. It sounds like Dallas had the 15th pick, traded to Detroit, and in return got 23, a second, and fifth. How do you find the draft pick trade history?
I don't know, but just based on I know HockeyDB lays out the entire draft history or trade history of a player, including the pick. So I don't know how you do it on Cap Friendly.
No, I'm looking at HockeyDB right now. Oh, show trades. Okay, I didn't see
that.
Okay. Oh, okay, yeah. So Ryan, it says draft pick rights traded from Detroit with a second and fifth. So the draft pick rights is 23 overall. So the 23 with the second and the fifth to Dallas for round one pick, which was 15.
Right, so, yeah. Okay. I was just they were that reading weird. That wrong. Okay.
They were that weird. Okay. Wow, okay, Johnson.
I didn't realize, okay. For some reason, I was thinking he was the second. They were trying to say he was the second round pick, but he's not. No, it was three different picks, okay.
So when it says draft pick rights traded from Detroit with second, like draft pick rights is referring to that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so it was a first, a second, and a fifth for that first.
That could have, they could make that so much clearly worded.
So yeah, oh, way better.
Like, that's really bad.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was 23, a second, and a fifth for 15. Wow.
Okay. Dallas. How did we get there? I don't even remember.
Well, we were talking about Mantha, and then you were like, Mantha for Vrana, one for one, and it very much was not one for one.
Yeah, it was not.
Okay, let's wrap up the show talking about Tarasenko. Man, oh man, were Sens fans mad about this one. A 2020 conditional fourth, which becomes a third if Florida wins the cup. The funny thing, though, is that it's a fourth in 2024, but if Florida wins the cup, it becomes a third in 2026. And, like, I'd wager that those picks are worth the same. Like, a fourth now or a third in 3 years. And then a 2025 third that they just get. It's kind of like that, would you rather have $75 right now or $100 in a year? Like,
I'll
take $75 exactly. right now. I'm going to forget in a year. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, Vladdy got, like, Tarasenko got to pick his spot. He picked his spot, scored two goals in his first game for Florida, and Sens fans were livid because some people thought that he was going to go for a first. And, like, honestly, if you're mad about that, it's your own fault. Like, what did you think?
Well, I thought maybe second plus something was reasonable before we knew he was limiting it to one team. But after you find that information out that he was only going to go to Florida, you look at the market, you look at that fact. And I think they did, I don't want to say good because it's obviously underwhelming, but it's an okay return for the market. Like a third and a fourth for a guy who only wanted to go to one team. And then Toffoli gets a second and a third for, you could have traded him anywhere. Like, I think it's just, I think it's pretty fair market value, maybe down one pick based on the no trade situation. So
if it becomes like obviously the condition kind of skewed, like if it were 2/3, I think people would be like, okay, whatever, fair enough. But because I think the optics of it is that it's a fourth and a third.
Well, I also think there was a lot of fans who were very unrealistically looking for a first, and seeing a third and a fourth, it just, they can't comprehend it. But
I thought a second round pick was the absolute maximum they were going to get. Like, and that would have taken like an absolute full on bidding war. But that was never going to happen because Tarasenko got to pick his spot.
I honestly thought second was pretty reasonable, and I was almost expecting that based on, I think it was Pierre LeBrun earlier in the week said they were actually asking a first plus something else. So I was a little more optimistic they could get a second, but I guess, nobody knew until he was traded that he was only willing to go to Florida. So
if he didn't have a full no move, he goes for a second, but he did. Yeah, I think so. You can
There's nothing you can do about
Mr. Dorian on that. Like, you're going to give a guy on a 1-year contract a full fucking no move clause. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, Steve Staios is still cleaning up the messes from.
He's going to be for another year and a half, two years, 3 years. How long is Norris's contract? that was mean. Okay, that's pretty much it. We kind of rifled through everything. We got to everything. Let's do one big winner for the deadline, and then we'll wrap up the pot. You can't pick Vegas.
Can we leave? Yeah, okay. I was just going to say the same thing. You can't pick Vegas.
Who's your big winner and big loser? Big winner, big loser. We should have prepared this before. This is a very on the spot.
Ooh, no, I got two for big winner, so why don't you go first?
Okay, I like Colorado as my big winner. If that wasn't one of yours, then please also say yours. And okay, now you go for the winner.
Yeah, I got Winnipeg. I really like what Winnipeg did. They've got a great team, and adding Toffoli, Monahan, and Colin Miller into that, I think, is great, great, kind of high-end complementary pieces.
And then I have two big losers, so you go first for losers, if you have one in mind.
Ooh, losers. You go first. Okay. Say one first.
Arizona is the loser of the day for me.
That was one I was considering.
Not retaining any money, and then getting a fifth and a fifth and a fourth, I think it was, or maybe I think they got a, I don't know. Yeah, they got
a fourth. One was a pick swap too.
Oh no, they got a sixth for Zucker. Oh my god, I forgot. I thought they got a fourth. They got a sixth for Zucker and they got a fifth for Dumba and gave up a seventh in the Dumba trade. Like, oh my god. Oh my god, that's so bad. Okay, do you have one?
Oof. I don't know, like outside of Ottawa, but like they didn't really have anything else to do other than sell off of. Oh, really?
I'm also saying Tampa, but because they had all this space and they were in on all these big names, they didn't really get anyone. Not that I necessarily disagree that they didn't get anyone. Like, I don't think this team's winning a cup with or without Noah Hanifin, but that's got to be tough, right? Like, the guy was gearing to go there and was trying to angle his way there and you still couldn't get him. Like, that sucks.
One I'll say that I don't necessarily think is a loser, but I expected to do more was the Rangers.
Yeah, they should have got Gensel.
Yeah, they got Wenberg and somebody else. But, like, I expected them to get a bigger piece for sure.
They got Wenberg, they got Jack Roslovic, which is fun. But
he's
kind of just a name now. He used to be sick when he was with when he was in that, like, Line A and Dubois trade. Like, he was a big piece of that. But he's kind of fallen off since.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'd label them a loser, but I definitely expected them to do more.
Okay, we've reached an hour. We'll probably be dissecting this trade deadline for the next few weeks. as we gear up for playoffs. Sneaky, only less than, like, there's less than 20 games left. Kind of crazy. Playoffs start in pretty much a month, which is also crazy. I think the regular season ends on April 14th. It is March 10th, so a month and a bit. Exciting. Maybe hit that outro unless you have any final thoughts. Did a crisp hour on deadline. Ripped through trades. Man, thank God for Vegas. Holy crap.
Go Vegas.
I'm happy we didn't talk about any LTIR stuff. That stuff is
awesome. Yeah.